ஓம் கணேசம் ஜனாதனாசலகாய சக்ஷுசமிலதன் ஜெனதஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குருவே நமஹ. ஸ்ரீ சைதன்யம் அனுபவிஸ்தம் ஸ்தபிதம் ஜனகுச்சலே சயம் பிரகலமயம் ததி சபந்தாதிகம் மன் சுகபுச்சுகஸ்ய கிருபசுந்துபைவச சித்தனம் பபனேபியோ வைஷ்ணவேபியோ நமோ நமஹ. Continuing in the first chapter of the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, we've heard the question of Prithvi Maharaj asking his spiritual master Sukadeva Goswami about the Lord and his quality, because in the previous canto he's heard how Krishna sided with Indra and the demigods and killed the demon Vritrasura. Well, he helped Indra kill him. And hearing about the partiality of the Lord towards the demigods, Prithvi Maharaj asked, how is this possible? Everyone, every living entity, whether he's on Sura or Asura, demigod or demon, is part of the Lord. How is it possible that he's partial? The Supreme, he's partial, like a child, like an ordinary man, friends and enemies? This cannot be. So please, oh great Sukadeva Goswami, you know everything, please explain to me how it appears that the Lord has acted partially towards Indra and the other demigods. So Sukadeva Goswami's reply is quite philosophical. The first part of his reply is very philosophical. And he explains that unlike ordinary living entities, like ourselves and everyone else who have material bodies, and who are caught, controlled by the modes of material nature, the Lord Himself is beyond this. He's transcendental. What He does and what we do are completely different, even though His activities may appear to be like those of conditioned souls, conditioned living entities within material bodies. This is called Naralila, where the Lord's activities imitate those of conditioned souls, but they are not actually on the same level as conditioned souls, because everything that Krishna does, or in his form as Vishnu or Narayan, everything they do is free of the forces of material nature. Everything that the Lord does is under the control, or he's working with his sarupa shakti, his internal energy, his spiritual potency. So whether it looks bad by our calculation or it looks good by our calculation, it has nothing to do with either the good or the bad of the material world. It is absolutely good, absolutely perfect and beneficial for everyone. Where on the other hand, everything that one does in the material world, conditioned by the laws of nature, under the control of passion, goodness, and ignorance, it is not good, practically speaking. It binds one further, deeper in material nature. So regardless of how it appears, it is not good. And for Krishna, everything he does, regardless of how it appears, is glorious and good for everyone. So everything is done by Krishna under the control of the internal energy, or under the influence of the internal energy. And when Krishna deals in the material world, he actually doesn't deal with the material world at all. What's going on is he's empowering the material energy. And he himself is dealing with his own energy. So again, the Lord is, the word used is Urusrava. His glories are widespread. So even when he kills, as was in the case of the two sons of Diti, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, that killing elevates them because he is Urusrava. His glories are widespread. His mercy touches whatever he does, whether it from our point of view happens to appear good or happens to appear bad. It's always good, all good. Therefore he is called Param Satyam. He is the absolute truth or the absolute goodness. So to explain this point further, he's now going to relate a story or a pastime that takes place between a conversation that takes place between Yudhisthira Maharaj, the great Pandava king, and Narada Muni, the great spiritual master, at the time of the Rajasuya sacrifice. We may have time to read something about that in a few moments, but we'll see. So, to illustrate this point about the impartiality of the Lord, meaning that all he does is good for everyone, he's telling this pastime. So this is text 13. Formerly, O King, Sukadeva Goswami is speaking, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, the great sacrifice, the king of all sacrifices, the great sage Narada, responding to his inquiry, recited historical facts showing how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always impartial, even when killing demons. In this regard, he gave a vivid example. O King, at the Rajasuya sacrifice, Maharaj Yudhisthira, the son of Maharaj Pandu, personally saw Sisupal merge into the body of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Therefore, struck with wonder, this is text 14:15, he inquired about the reason for this from the great sage Narada, who was seated there. When he inquired, all the sages present also heard him ask his question. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired, "It is very wonderful that the demon Shishupal merged into the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though he was extremely envious. This Sayuja Mukti is impossible to attain even for great transcendentalists. How then did the enemy of the Lord attain it?" So there is a pastime that takes place that's narrated in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, where the Sisupal was a very envious soul. And who was he specifically envious of? He was envious of Krishna. Actually speaking, if anyone is envious of anyone, ultimately he's still more envious of Krishna. Because why are we envious of someone? We're envious when someone has something that we don't have, or we want, or we think we want. So if someone in this world sparks envy in us, which really springs from a lack or an emptiness that we feel within ourselves, and we're thinking, oh, if I had that, this person has that, and if I had it, then I'd be satisfied, I'd be happy. So it's springing from a need we have, but it's falsely, that need is falsely directed towards something that won't actually fulfill the emptiness, the need in the heart, because the ultimate need, prema paramartho mahan, it's love for Krishna. That connection is the only thing that will satisfy us. In fact, and we can all prove this to ourselves, we all naturally, mentally project this emptiness and this need on other things of the world. But we can see that so many people in this world have that very thing that I'm thinking that if I get it, it's going to make me happy. And I'm envious of someone who already has it. But is that person who already has it happy? Has that thing made him happy? Has it fulfilled the emptiness, the longing? Has it made him satisfied and he no longer needs anything else? What to speak of? Does it save him from death? Disease? Loved ones dying? Anxieties due to one thing or another? No. So actually, love of Krishna, premandana charita bhakti balochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu valokayanti. When one has love of Krishna, that is like the magic wand that when taken over a big area, it turns everything magically okay. And if one doesn't have that, but one, whatever one has is insufficient, it seems insufficient. So Sisupal was envious of Krishna from his childhood, before he could speak. What's that pastime? Sisupal, I can't remember how it started, but he doesn't even know when he was a baby. Practically the first, there's more to it, but the first words out of his mouth were inimical to Krishna. And there's a reason for that, which will come out later. Maharaj, what's the pastime of Sisupal when he was a very little baby? Do you know that story?
I just heard in the class and he said he always said that he hates Krishna even before that, even.
Yeah, when he was not that little, but when he was just little, like the first words he said or something inimical to Krishna, or he opened his eyes, something. Anyway, in any case, we're going to hear something. When he grew up with his brother Dantavakra, always hating Krishna, envious, completely inimical. So, parallel to that was something else going on. Yudhisthira, to show, because there's a tendency for people in this world to think that if I become a devotee of Krishna, then I won't become opulent. I have so many material desires. I want to be rich. I want to be famous. If I become a devotee of Krishna, he'll take everything away from me and make me depend upon him. So I don't want to be a devotee of Krishna. It's better that I worship Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, for example, is very poor, he's poverty stricken, he doesn't have a house, he doesn't have proper clothing, he meditates under a tree. But yet, he is Ashutosha. He's very easily pleased. And his devotees become very wealthy. But Krishna, on the other hand, is so opulent, but his devotees at times become poverty stricken and lose everything and are calling out, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So sometimes one may not want to worship Krishna due to this fear. And so much of the Bhagavatam is actually counteracts that specific point, the karma sava karma va moksha karma dadade. But Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to show people clearly that devotees of Krishna become the most opulent, to remove their fear. So he wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, which entails him being acknowledged as the emperor of the world, the topmost of kings. There are kings, but there are many kings, but there is one emperor. So the sacrifice known as Rajasuya establishes the emperor, because every other king has to submit. So before the Rajasuya sacrifice could be performed, Jarasandha had to be subjugated, and that occurred. And then, by Krishna's grace, with Bhima and Arjuna. So that is related in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And then the Rajasuya sacrifice was going to be performed and everyone was invited to attend. So the 74th chapter of the 10th canto opens. We'll start reading from the text 11, where it describes the who was invited, some of the great personages who were invited. So Drona was invited, Bhishma, Kripa, Dhritarashtra with his sons, the wise Vidura, and many other Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, all eager to witness the sacrifice, came. Indeed, all the kings came there with their entourages. All their followers came. The Brahmin priests then plowed the sacrificial ground with golden plowshares and initiated King Yudhisthira for the for the sacrifice in accordance with the tradition set down by standard authorities. The utensils, everything of the sacrifice was made of gold. The demigods attended, the upadevatas, the lesser demigods attended. Great serpents, sages, yakshas, rakshas, celestial birds, kanaras, charanas, and earthly kings all were invited, and indeed they all came from every direction to the Rajasuya sacrifice of King Yudhisthira. They were not in the least astonished to see the opulence. It was incredible opulence. Everything was gold. For it was quite appropriate for a devotee of Krishna to have such opulence. The priests were as powerful as demigods. They performed the Rajasuya sacrifice for King Yudhisthira in accordance with the Vedic injunctions, just as the demigods had previously performed it for Varuna. On the day of extracting the soma juice, the somaras, that brings great, great longevity, that's a part of the sacrifice. On that day, King Yudhisthira properly and very attentively worshipped the priests and the most exalted personalities of the assembly. So there were many ritualistic parts of the ceremony, including the plowing of the earth with the golden plow, the partaking in the somaras. And then the next part of the ceremony was something called Agra Puja. What does Agra mean? Means the first. So who is the topmost, the capital? The topmost person, that person who, the most exalted person present, is to be worshipped. So then naturally the question comes, well, who's the most exalted person present? So there were many persons qualified for this honor, and everyone was pondering them, and they were unable to decide who was the most exalted person present. But Krishna was present. And Sahadev, the young Pandava, began to speak up. Why was it that they couldn't understand this Krishna? Krishna stu bhagavan sayam aham savasya prabhavo mataksavam pravartate. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Why couldn't they understand? Here is purports. Some of the purport here. The great Acharya Jiva Goswami points out, text 15 of this chapter states that the members of the assembly were not astonished at the opulence of the sacrifice, since they knew that King Yudhisthira was a devotee of Krishna. Text 18 still states that the assembly could not select the most deserving candidate for being worshipped first. This indicates that many of the Brahmins present were not fully realized transcendentalists, but rather they were conventional Brahmanas, uncertain of the supreme conclusion of the Vedic wisdom. Similarly, Acharya Vishwanath, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur always has most wonderful comments. He comments that the undecided members of the assembly were less intelligent ones, and not such exalted personalities as Brahma, Shiva, and Dwapayana, Vyasadeva. And what were they thinking? These most exalted personalities, what were they thinking? They thought, since today no one is asking our opinion, why should we say anything? Furthermore, there is Sahadev, who is renowned for his sharp skill in analyzing all sorts of circumstance. He can help appoint the person who is to be worshipped first. Only if he somehow fails to speak or cannot understand the situation, shall we speak up, despite no one's having inquired from us. Having made up their minds in this way, the greatest personalities remain silent. This is how Vishwanath Chakravarti advises us to understand what occurred in the assembly. But now Sahadev begins to speak. So who is worthy of being worshipped first? Sahadev says, certainly it is Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Achyuta Shreshtam Bhagavan Satvatam Pati. He is the Personality of Godhead, the chief of the Yadavas, who deserves the highest position. In truth, he himself comprises all the demigods worshipped and sacrificed, along with such aspects of the worship as the sacred place, the time, and the paraphernalia. The entire universe is founded upon him, as all the great sacrificial performances with their sacred fires, oblations and mantras, Sankhya and Yoga, both aim towards him. The one without a second, O assembly members, that unborn Lord, relying solely on himself, maintains, creates and destroys this cosmos by his personal energy. And thus the existence of this universe depends on him alone. He creates the many activities of the world. And thus, by his grace, the whole world endeavors for the ideals of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Therefore, we should give the highest honor to Krishna, the Supreme Lord. If we do so, we will be honoring all living beings and our own selves as well. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated infinitely should honor Krishna, the perfect, perfectly peaceful and perfectly complete Supreme Soul of all beings, the Supreme Lord who views nothing as separate for himself. So having said this, Sahadev, who understands Lord Krishna's power, fell silent. And having heard his words, all the saintly persons present congratulated him, exclaiming, "Sadhu, sadhu, excellent, excellent. You have spoken properly. This is true. Good. Excellent." King Yudhisthira was delighted to hear this pronouncement of the brahmanas. Everyone agreed. From which he understood the mood of the entire assembly. Overwhelmed with love, he fully worshipped Lord Krishna, the master of the senses. After bathing Lord Krishna's feet, Maharaj Yudhisthira joyfully sprinkled the water upon his own head, and then upon the heads of his wife, brothers, and other family members and ministers. That water purifies the whole world. As he honored the Lord with presentations of yellow silken garments and precious jeweled ornaments, the king's tear-filled eyes prevented him from looking directly at the Lord. When they saw Lord Krishna thus honored, nearly all who were present joined their palms reverentially, exclaiming, "Obeisances to you, all victory to you." And then they bowed down to him, and flowers rained down from above. But there was someone present who did not like this very much. The intolerant son of Dhammaghosh, whose name was Sisupal. He became infuriated upon hearing the glorification of Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities. He stood up from his seat and angrily waving his arms fearlessly spoke to the entire assembly the following harsh words against the Supreme Lord. So he began to speak, criticizing Krishna. And there was actually, when he was very young, I remember a bit of the story. There was a he was criticizing Krishna from a very young age, and he was going to be killed. And because they were related, they were relatives, Sisupal's mother or grandmother Well, someone said to Krishna, Krishna, please be tolerant. Krishna was going to kill him. Please be tolerant. And Krishna agreed, okay. I will tolerate his insults and criticisms 1,000 times. 100 times. Did I get the story right? Sort of right?
Well, you missed a little bit. I'm okay. Not sure what you mean.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay, what's the rest of it?
Well, he was born with 4 arms and 3 eyes.
Yeah.
And a voice from the sky, no, it was Narada Muni. He appeared and he said, whoever's lap he's placing is going to kill him. The arms and eyes would disappear. So his mother, everywhere she went, she was placing him into everybody's lap. And eventually he placed him into Krishna's lap and the arms and eyes disappeared. And she begged him that, like you were saying, please don't kill him. And Krishna said, only if he utters more than 99, criticize me more than 99 times, only then I'll kill him.
Hmm.
So
his time is coming right now. Now, why didn't Sisupal say anything the whole time when they were putting, they were proposing Krishna and Sahadeva was speaking, and he didn't object at that time, but after the worship was done, he objected. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions the reason Sisupal did not object when Sahadev proposed Krishna for the Agra Puja. There was a reason. Sisupal wanted to ruin King Yudhisthira's sacrifice, because if one's envious of Krishna, one's also going to be envious of the success of Krishna's devotees. And Sisupal certainly was that. If Sisupal had argued early against Krishna's receiving the first worship, and another person had been selected, the sacrifice would have been proceeded normally, and Yudhisthira would have become the head, the emperor, having performed the Rajasuya sacrifice. Therefore, Sisupal allowed Krishna to be selected. He waited until the worship was over, and then spoke up, hoping in this way to demonstrate that the sacrifice was now spoiled, because Krishna was given the first worship, and that was incorrect. And therefore the sacrifice was now wrong because the Agra Puja had been done improperly, and therefore Yudhisthira couldn't properly perform the Rajasuya sacrifice and he couldn't be declared anything. He would fail. So now he was going to prove that Krishna is not at all worthy of worship. But actually what he really proves is that it's time for him to die. Thus he would ruin the endeavor of Maharaj Yudhisthira. So Sisupal began. And I'm not going to read them, but there are so many criticisms here. And each one of them has a double meaning. So every criticism that's spoken can be interpreted in a way that it's not a criticism at all of Krishna, but it's actually a glorification of Krishna. So Sisupal begins. The statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has now indeed been proven true, since the intelligence of wise elders has now become diverted by the words of a mere boy, Sahadev. O leaders of the assembly, you know best who is a fit candidate for being honored. Therefore you should not heed the words of a child when he claims that Krishna deserves to be worshipped. How can you pass over the most exalted members of this assembly, topmost sages dedicated to the absolute truth, endowed with the powers of austerity, divine insight, and strict adherence to severe vows? They are sanctified by knowledge and worshipped even by the rulers of the universe. How does this coward boy, the disgrace of his family, deserve your worship any more than a crow deserves to eat the sacred prodasha rice cake? So he was really nasty. But each one of those criticisms has a glorious meaning. For example, and they are given by Srila Swami, one of the great commentators on the Bhagavatam. He's just a coward boy. He is Gopal. But Gopal not only means cowherd, but also the protector of the Vedas and the earth. Kulapamsana, which means the disgrace of his family, can be divided up in the sandhi, and some can be broken up in a different way. And it could also be Kulapa Amsana, giving it a totally different meaning, indicating Kulapa means those who prattle with crooked words contrary to the Vedas, and Amsana means the destroyer. So one by one, every criticism is actually a glorification. Even the one where he says that he shouldn't be, where he says that he did not deserve the purudasa rice cake. He does not deserve this rice cake. And Srila Swami says, yes, he doesn't deserve to eat the rice cake, so he deserves to receive everything that we possess, since he is the ultimate proprietor of everything, including ourselves. Thus we should give Lord Krishna our life and soul, not merely a ritualistic offering of rice cakes. So in this way, one criticism after another, he's saying one thing. So, bereft of all good fortune, Sisupal spoke these and other insults, but the Supreme Lord said nothing. 76, 77, 78, 70. But the Supreme Lord spoke nothing, just as a lion ignores a jackal's cry. Upon hearing such intolerable blasphemy of the Lord, several members of the assembly covered their ears and walked out, angrily cursing the king of Chedi, Sisupala. Anyone who fails to immediately leave the place where he hears criticism of the Supreme Lord or his faithful devotee will certainly fall down, bereft of his pious credit. Then the sons of the Pandus, all the Pandavas, became furious, and together with the warriors of the Matsya, Kaikeyi, and Srinjaya clans, they rose up from their seats with weapons poised, ready to kill Sisupala. Undaunted, Sisupala then took up his sword and shield in the midst of all the assembled kings, O Bharata, and hurled insults at those who sided with Lord Krishna. At that point, the Supreme Lord stood up and checked his devotees. He then angrily sent forth his razor-sharp disc and severed the head of his enemy as he was attacking. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained why Krishna killed him in this way. If Lord Krishna had done nothing, if he didn't do anything, there probably would have been a savage fight on the sacrificial grounds, and thus the whole ceremony would have been drenched in blood, spoiling the sanctified atmosphere. It would have caused a fault and ruined the sacrifice of Yudhisthira. Therefore, in order to protect the Rajasuya sacrifice of Krishna's beloved devotee Yudhisthira, the Lord immediately severed Sisupala's head with his razor-sharp disc in such a way that not a drop of blood fell within the sacrificial ground. So Krishna does many things with one act. When Sisupala was thus killed, a great roar and howl went up from the crowd. Taking advantage of that disturbance, the few kings who were supporters of Sisupala quickly left the assembly out of fear of their lives. Just then, an effulgent light arose from Sisupala's body, and as everyone watched, the soul from Sisupala's body, it exited Sisupala's body and entered Lord Krishna, just like a meteor falling from the sky to the earth. So how has this happened? So Yudhisthira, this is what we're reading in the 7th canto, Yudhisthira, Sukadev Goswami is relating to Prikit Maharaj, Yudhisthira's question to Narada Muni after he saw this occur. So it goes on to explain more how the sacrifice was completed. But now we'll rejoin the this story over here that Sukadeva Goswami is reciting to Prikhet Maharaj. So Narada Muni was there in the assembly, and Yudhisthira saw this, so he asked Narada Muni, he said, because Narada Muni knows, so exalted, he said, "It is very wonderful that the demon Sisupal merged into the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though extremely envious." This is text 16. "This Sayujya Mukti, this merging, becoming one with the Lord, is called Sayujya Mukti, is impossible to attain even for great transcendentalists. How then did the enemy of the Lord attain it?" So this is all going to prove the equality of the Lord and the mercy of the Lord and how He is impartial. So after all, Sisupal was not a jnani, he was not a karmi, he was not a devotee, but yet he got this spiritual result. How did he attain it? He was just an enemy of the Lord. Text 17. "O great sage," he asked Narada, "we are all eager to know the cause for this mercy of the Lord. I've heard that formerly a king named Vena blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that all the brahmanas consequently obliged him to go to hell." In the fourth canto, this is described, that if just being nasty and critical is a qualification for going on getting a transcendental result, first of all, why doesn't everyone else in the world who's nasty and critical of God gain that result? And why didn't Vena gain it? He went to hell. Sisupal should have also been sent to hell. How did he merge into the Lord's existence? From the very beginning of his childhood, when he could not even speak properly, Shishupal, the most sinful son of Dhamma Ghosh, began blaspheming the Lord. And he continued to be envious of Sri Krishna until death. Similarly, his brother Dantavakra continued the same habits. Although these two men, Shishupal and Dantavakra, repeatedly blasphemed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, Krishna, the Supreme Brahman, they were quite healthy. Indeed, their tongues were not attacked by white leprosy, nor did they enter the darkest region of hellish life. We are certainly most surprised by this. How is it possible for Shishupal and Dantavakra, in the presence of many exalted persons, to enter very easily into the body of Krishna, whose nature is very difficult to obtain? So Yudhisthira and so many others saw this occur and they were amazed. "This matter is undoubtedly very wonderful. Indeed, my intelligence has become disturbed, just as the flame of a candle is disturbed by a blowing wind. O Narada Muni, you know everything. Kindly let me know the cause of this wonderful event." So he approached his guru Narada Muni and asked him to explain what had happened. Text 22. This is Sukadeva Goswami narrating. So he said, "After hearing the request of Maharaj Yudhisthira, Narada Muni, the most powerful spiritual master who knew everything, was very pleased. Thus he replied in the presence of everyone taking part in the jagya. The great sage Sri Naraji, he said, 'O King, blasphemy and praise, chastisement and respect are experienced because of ignorance.'" He's talking about we, conditioned souls. When someone says something nice about us, we say, "Oh, this person's very intelligent, isn't he?" And when someone criticizes us, that's proof that they're foolish. So blasphemy and praise, chastisement and respect are experienced because of ignorance. The body of the conditioned soul is planned by the Lord for suffering in the material world through the agency of the external energy. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. So the basic idea is that the living entity under the influence of Maya experiences effects after someone criticizes him or praises him, gives him something, takes away something from him. Inside he experiences something. But different from the conditioned soul who is under the control of Maya, the Lord, who is not at all touched by the material energy, He experiences nothing like this. So Yudhisthira was thinking, why did he get a good result? After all, he did a horrible thing. Why did he get mercy? As if Krishna was actually angry at him. Here's the part of Prabhupada's purport that we'll read. Actually, the suffering of being blasphemed and the enjoyment of being praised, the acceptance of a good welcome or chastisement by harsh words are felt in the material conception of life. But since the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not material, but Satchidananda Vigraha, he is unaffected by insults or greetings, blasphemy or prayers. Being always unaffected and complete, he does not feel extra pleasure when offered nice prayers by the devotee, although the devotee benefits by offering prayers to the Lord. He's already full. So it's not that he feels good about himself when someone praises him, and therefore his self-esteem goes up. It's not like that at all. He's already full and perfect. But the one who's offering the prayers is benefited. Indeed, the Lord is very kind to his so-called enemy, because one who always thinks of the Supreme Person, of the Personality of Godhead as an enemy, also benefits, although he thinks of the Lord adversely. If a conditioned soul thinking of the Lord as an enemy or a friend somehow or another becomes attached to the Lord, he receives great benefit. Text 24. My dear King, the conditioned soul, being in the bodily conception of life, considers his body to be his self and considers everything in relationship with the body to be his. Because he has this wrong conception of life, he is subjected to dualities like praise and chastisement. Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living entity is annihilated. He thinks that when the body is finished, I'm finished, I don't exist anymore. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, the Supersoul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus, he has no enemy and no friend. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy. We'll read some different parts of this purport. Because of being covered, Srila Prabhupada's purport, because of being covered by material bodies, the conditioned souls, including even great learned scholars and falsely educated professors, all think that as soon as the body is finished, everything is finished. This is due to their bodily conception of life. Krishna has no such bodily conception, nor is his body different from his self. Therefore, since Krishna has no material conception of life, how can he be affected by material prayers and accusations? Krishna's body is described herewith as Kaivalya, none different from him, from himself. Since everyone has a material body, bodily conception of life, if Krishna had such a conception, what would be the difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul? So Krishna's body is Satchidananda Vigraha, Nadirali Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. It's composed not of muscles and blood and bones, but it's composed of Satchidananda, Satchidananda Vigraha, eternity, bliss and knowledge. A little further in the purport. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tanaham dvishata kroran samsureshu naradamam chipram madhisamasubam asureshe vyonashu. Those whom envious and mischievous, who are the lowest amongst men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Whenever the Lord punishes persons like demons, however, such punishment is meant for the good of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, being envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may accuse him, saying Krishna is bad, Krishna is a thief, Krishna is the cowherd boy, or this or that. But Krishna, being kind to all living entities, does not consider such accusations. Instead, he takes account of the conditioned soul's chanting of Krishna, Krishna, so many times. He sometimes punishes such demons for one life by putting them in a lower species. But then when they have stopped accusing him, they are liberated in the next life because of chanting Krishna's name constantly. Blaspheming the Supreme Lord or his devotee is not at all good for the conditioned soul. But Krishna, being very kind, punishes the conditioned soul in one life for such sinful activities and then takes him back home, back to Godhead. The vivid example of this is Vritrasura. We just read this in the sixth canto. Who was formerly Chittaketu Maharaj, a great devotee. Because he derided Lord Shiva, the foremost of all devotees, he had to accept the body of a demon called Vritra. But then he was taken back to Godhead. Thus when Krishna punishes a demon or conditioned soul, he stops that soul's habit of blaspheming him. And when the soul becomes completely pure, the Lord takes him back to Godhead. So this thinking about Krishna is so potent. Or speaking Krishna's name is so potent. And we'll hear more about this tomorrow. There's one more verse we'll read describing this. Because this is showing how great Krishna is. He's so big and so powerful that anything, anyone, regardless of the motive, if anything or anyone is placed before him in his presence, if somehow comes in his presence, even if their motive is impure, it's purified. That person will be purified just by saying Krishna. Once said, someone told him that the devotees, the Hare Krishnas, I think it was in Australia or New Zealand, the newspaper article had come out saying bad things about the devotees. And Prabhupada said, saying Krishna is bad is good. In other words, the same point. Not that it's good to say bad things about Krishna or Krishna's devotees, but it's good to say Krishna. And the eternal effect of saying Krishna's name stays. And the temporary effect of saying the bad part goes in time. One life, 10 lives at some point. But the good part stays. So that's Prabhupada. And he, Prabhupada used to say that his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when an article would be submitted to their magazine, The Harmonist, or Sajjana Tosini, if Krishna's name was mentioned many, many, many times, he'd say, oh, this is a good article. It's printed. Because Krishna's name is so powerful. So text 26, that's like the sun. Even if something filthy is placed in the presence of the hot sun, it's purified. Rather than the sun being contaminated, that thing is purified. So not that we should become envious of the Lord and criticize him, but focusing, he is so wonderful and so powerful and so great, that focusing one's mind upon him one way or another has such positive effects. So text 26. Tasmad varanu bandena nirvarena bainava snehat kamena vayunjat katanchen nekshate pritak. Therefore, by enmity or by devotional service, by fear, by affection, or by kamena, lusty desires, by all of these, or by any one of them, if a conditioned soul somehow or another concentrates his mind upon the Lord, regardless of the motive, the result is the same. For the Lord, because of his blissful position, is never affected by enmity or friendship. purport. From this, one should not conclude that because Krishna is unaffected by favorable prayers or unfavorable blasphemy, one should therefore blaspheme the Supreme Lord. This is what Prabhupada says. This is not the regulative principle. Bhakti yoga means anukulena Krishna anushilanam. One should serve Krishna very favorably, trying to please Krishna. This is the real injunction. Here it is said that although an enemy thinks of Krishna unfavorably, the Lord is unaffected by such anti-devotional service. Thus he offers his benedictions, even to Shishupal and similarly inimical conditioned souls. This does not mean, however, that one should be inimical towards the Lord. So Prabhupada will say this again and again so we don't get the wrong idea. But it's rather just showing how powerful and wonderful Krishna is. The stress is given to the favorable execution of devotional service, not purposeful blasphemy of the Lord. It is said, Nindam Bhagavata Srinvam Tatparasya Janasyava Tato Na Paitiya Sopi Yatyada Sukritachyuta. One who hears blasphemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee should immediately take action or should leave. Otherwise, he will be put into hellish life perpetually. There are so many such injunctions. Therefore, as a regulative principle, one should not be unfavorable towards the Lord, but always favorably inclined towards Him. Shishupal's achievement of oneness with the Supreme Lord was different, because Jai and Vijay, from the very beginning of their material existence, were ordained to treat the Supreme Lord as an enemy for three lives, and then return home back to Godhead. Jai and Vijay inwardly knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they purposefully became his enemies to be delivered from material life. From the very beginning of their lives, they thought of Lord Krishna as an enemy, and even though blaspheming Lord Krishna, they chanted the holy name of Krishna constantly along with their inimical thoughts. Thus they were purified because of chanting the holy name of Krishna. It is to be understood that even a blasphemer can be freed from sinful activities by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Certainly, therefore, freedom is assured for a devotee who is always favorable to the service of the Supreme of the Lord. This will be clear from the following verse. By rapt attention fixed upon Krishna, one is purified, and thus one is delivered from material life. Srila Vishnu of Chakravarti Thakur has very nicely explained the word bhayena, which means by fear. When the gopis went to Krishna in the dead of night, they certainly feared chastisement by their relatives, their husbands, brothers and fathers. But nonetheless, not caring for their relatives, they went to Krishna. There was certainly fear, but this fear could not check their devotional service to Krishna. One should not mistakenly think that Lord Krishna must be worshipped by an inimical attitude like that of Shishupal. The injunction is anukulyasya grahanam pratikulasya virginam. One should give up unfavorable activities and accept only favorable conditions in devotional service. Generally, if one blasphemes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's punished. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 16:19, tanaham dvishata kuram, same quotation as the last verse, samsureshan radama chipram ajasam asurbam asureshiva yonashu. There are many such injunctions. One should not try to worship Krishna unfavorably, and Sisupal doesn't have a disciplic succession, so you can't take initiation in it. One should worship him favorably, not unfavorably, otherwise he must be punished, at least for one life, to be purified. As one should not try to be killed by embracing an enemy, a tiger or a snake, one should not blaspheme the Supreme Personality of God and become his enemy in order to be put into hellish life. The purpose of this verse is to emphasize that even the enemy of the Lord can be delivered, not to speak of his friend. The conclusion, therefore, is not that we should become inimical, but rather we should become devotees, because Krishna is so great that in his presence, anyone, everyone, whether regardless of their mood, becomes purified. And then just a little bit more at the end of the Prabhupada's purport. Continuing this point of don't blaspheme the Lord. As for Hiranyakashipu, which we're going to hear about quite soon, although he was extremely inimical towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he always thought of his son, who was a great devotee. Therefore, by the grace of his son Prahlad Maharaj, Hiranyakashipu was also delivered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hiranyakashipu's chapi Bhagavan Nindayatama Bhavikshur Atyagatsuno Praladasyanubhavata. The conclusion is that one should not give up pure devotional service for one's own benefit. One should not imitate Hiranyakashipu or Shishupal. This is not the way to achieve success. So we'll speak more about this principle, wonderful principle, to approach the Lord, how powerful it is to think about Him. We'll speak more about this tomorrow. And tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll conclude this chapter. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.